Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeBille with you with a positive mind, if we're lucky. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing new ideas, concepts, a guest or two to help you lead a more positively minded life. Many years ago, a man came to see me. He was a major producer of TV series, and he had a number of different things. There were game shows that he did, and he was depressed, but he said, I have all these game shows, and every game show he created was a success. So he had millions and millions of dollars. He's no longer with us. And I said to him, but everything you do turns to gold. He said, that's because I'm lucky. I said, lucky? He said, yeah, I'm lucky. He said, I'm depressed, but I'm a very lucky man. Everything I do turns out right. I'm lucky. And I said, wait a minute, if you're lucky, how could you be depressed? And I realized there were two different things. He had a belief, and he separated from himself the belief that he achieved all these things, and nothing could touch him because of that. So Lady Luck, or luck as we call it, plays an important role in our life, as we could see the people standing around the corners trying to win the lotto, people trying to meet somebody for the first time and hope it's going to turn out to be the romance of your life. Well, lucky for me, I have Linda Vanella right here in the studio right now with us. Hey, Linda. Glad to have you here.
Hi, Armand. I'm glad to be here.
Today we're going to talk about superstition. Today we want to talk about superstition, and I want to talk about luck. And it brings me back to, for those of you who are of Italian descent, as I am, partially, I want you to take a look at something called Household Saints with Patricia Arquette. Household Saints was a movie. It was a miserable movie. But it was a movie about the evil eye, Malocchio, the chicken, the whole thing. This Italian family would talk about all these misfortunes that would be brought upon you if you did the wrong thing. There were many. As I was growing up, there were many things, and so many so that we were scared of just about everything. Like, don't pass a church without crossing yourself or something like that. And there were so many that we believed could automatically happen to us. Then the church later, as I became an adult, the church couldn't change it. They said, we don't believe in superstition. What is superstition? Superstition is a belief in some supernatural causality that one event leads to the cause of another without any process in the physical world linking the two events. So if you believe you got the Malocchio, which is the evil eye, and that gave you a cold, that's superstition. But if you went into a room with a person who had an eye infection, and you got an eye infection, is that superstition? We know that that's possible, but we didn't know that that was possible, but we may have made believe that that was mystical and not mystical. The whole mystical idea is fascinating. But we're not here to discuss that. We're really looking to the whole idea of superstition and where it takes us. Because a lot of you live your life by superstition. And it's not a bad thing. Not believing in something. If you're kind, the world will be kind back to you. Now, that's superstition. Well, maybe so. If you give, somebody will give back to you. Is that superstition? Well, maybe so if you choose the right people. But when we use the word superstition, in fact, do you remember where the word superstition comes from? Is it Greek? It's French. From superstition, which meant in Latin the superstare. Superstition meaning superstare. That means if I look at you, right, I can do something to you. This you may not think, my friends, is a lot of bearing on our adult life nowadays. But how many times do you get the way somebody's looking at you determines a great deal? He looked at me wrong, so I punched him, right? He looked at me. He was staring at me, meaning I know he had sexual desire for me. So the look seems to be very important. Therefore, on that, this thing superstition is built about what could possibly happen. What is the evil eye, Linda?
The evil eye is a look that is believed by many cultures to actually be able to cause injury or bad luck for the person at whom it is directed, for reasons usually based on envy or dislike. That's what the evil eye is defined as. The term also refers to the power attributed to the person who's giving the evil eye to someone else. So it could be either intentional or unintentional. So therefore, the evil eye is something, a source of power. It's based upon envy, and so it's usually bestowed upon children or inanimate objects, valuable items.
What do you mean bestowed on?
Well, sometimes people will feel that it's come across that when people are looking at a child with their childless woman, and so through the cultures, it was seen as envy of someone's child or valuables.
Oh, so in other words, you don't want someone to look at your child.
No, there are many times.
In fact, having somebody look at your child directly is, in a way, giving into, it possibly means you could lose your child.
Yes.
And the stretch out of that is that there was a lot of envy, right? Because people would steal children and get envious and want to hurt you.
Yes, for sure.
So one of the things we watched out for is somebody looking at your child.
Or complimenting them. There are many times when people will feel very ill at ease when someone else will tell them, oh, what a beautiful child. It brings about this feeling of an evil eye that you're bestowing and envious. And so that it's a bestowing upon the child a feeling of almost dryness, withering, and even death. So it's been something that has been cultivated. It began in Greece, and then it went over to Rome, and it has spread throughout the world. So it's something that we see even to this day where people will say, gee, I'm uncomfortable the way that person looked at my child. Or, you know, even like you're saying, when people meet other people, gee, I don't like the way he looked at me or the way she looked at me. What did she mean by that look?
All right, now we have to separate from this a possibility that there's a causative factor, and then a possibility that it's all psychological and paranoia, you know, and we make it all up. But let's go back with the first one. So if you go through every culture, and I've looked through some of the pages of different cultures, going from the Hebrew, mm-hmm. which if somebody says something good, you have to say two, 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 or you have to knock on wood, or you do something to make sure that it doesn't get taken away.
Yes.
And in every culture, there is something that wards off the evil eye. They have a symbol of some sort. You wear something around your neck.
Yes.
I know there's something with a hand related to it.
Yes. Actually, because the evil eye was always seen throughout the cultures as something that draws fluid or draws moisture from the person that it's being targeted at. We see fish. Fish is the symbol of moistness, that upon a fish, no one could actually put an evil eye because a fish is full of moisture. So it's very much looked upon as something that's drying, so that it would pull life and moisture from whatever the object.
So the way you stop the evil eye is you wear dead fish around your neck.
Exactly.
What about the flounder? He's got a funny eye. Okay, yes, but it is that wet and dry thing. The term evil eye can be gained from the Old English word, which had to do with more like overlooking.
Overlooking.
Looking over. So if we have these beliefs, my friends, how many of them are affecting you? In today's program, we're going to take a survey of the things about which you are suspicious. Superstitious, I'm sorry. Things that you believe are real connections. If I do this, this can or will happen. Now, I'll take you back to my practice as a therapist in 1985. I was treating somebody who was a multiple personality. Now, multiple personalities, if you don't know it, is somebody who can be anyone of a number of people at any given time. But they don't know that they've switched between personalities. So at one moment, the person will be sitting there talking to me, and then something happens, which is called a fugue state, which is like they get a little dizzy for a moment. And then all of a sudden, another person is sitting in the chair. Now, this person could be a woman who becomes a man. Now, of course, they don't change their physical characteristics that profoundly, but the face changes, the face muscles change. So I had one woman I was treating, and I was talking to her, and she had this little boy, Bobby. And Bobby would appear in the chair every now and then whenever she got scared. And then whenever she got angry, there was another one, Mary, who would appear, and Mary would get up there, and she would yell at me. So I'm working with this multiple personality phenomenon. And one day I was trying to get to why this lead character, who I'll call Brenda, why Brenda was so afraid of taking any chances, of getting angry. And she said, because I could destroy things just by getting angry. And I said, what do you mean you could destroy things by getting angry? She said, see, this is what happens. If I get angry, anything around me could get hurt. She said, if I got angry right now, thinking about something else, you, Armand, could get hurt, because I don't want you to get hurt. So I said, Brenda, let's do it. I'll let you know when I feel some pain. Let's see you get angry. She said, I can't. And the source of it was the following. We went down into a deep hypnosis back to her childhood when we found this child who was sitting in a room by itself. And the mother had on the fireplace mantle a bunch of beautiful little vases she had collected. The child sitting there was being punished and told to sit still. But she had completely disappeared. She had completely kind of gone away from herself. Then when she got angry, another personality popped out of her, went over to the still, and threw one of those glasses on the floor, smashing it, and then went back into her body. So she had no idea that she had done this. Of course, she was punished for it, but she said, I didn't do it. All I knew is I was sitting here, and it broke. This is, you're shaking your head. Oh, this is what it's like to work with multiple personalities, Linda. Yes, it's quite an event. Mm. But besides this, what this showed me was that we have belief that we can cause things because some other part of ourselves acts them out, see, in some kind of way. Like you could be the most loving person in the world, but you could also be passive-aggressive. And without knowing it, you could hurt people terribly through your passive-aggressiveness because you didn't show up at the wedding on time, so they had to cancel it, or you didn't show up for the very important scene at the funeral where you were going to speak because you didn't complete the work you did. And it hurts people, and you believe this is not really your doing. You're just trying your very best. So we get to distrust ourselves. Then we get to distrust the world around us. There are things that we begin to distrust about, things that could be done ritualistically to us. Like, don't go in the water after you eat. Is that a superstition or a reality? What is that, Linda?
Well, it was to me thought of as a superstition when I first heard it as a child. But, of course, people will say, well, no, it does have some scientific evidence, because while we're digesting, we shouldn't be exercising and swimming. So it puts people in a...
What do you mean shouldn't be?
Well, there's a... Of course, I've heard that.
A theory
that it isn't advised to be...
Why?
Well, it's the same reason why...
It's less efficient, that's all.
It's less efficient. Your body isn't... So you're more at risk of drowning or putting yourself in a dangerous situation.
So you shouldn't take a bath after you eat.
Oh, well, a bath is one thing, but swimming in the ocean might be something else. So
but you see these cautions and these consequences, because you may die from drowning. If you ate too much food and you went in the water and you felt a little crampy, get out of the water. Right? It's death threat, and that's what these things become. It's so scary, you know? Don't stand out if it's raining, because the lightning may strike you and kill you. We get to these and we say, okay, why are we pushing it so far? Why do we want to believe in these, and superstitions serve the neurosis? They get you to do exactly what you wanted to do originally anyway.
But may I say something? I see that as one example, swimming and eating. But the other one that I know I heard as a child is don't whistle, because it makes the Blessed Mother cry.
Oh, that really, but that's really true.
So, but I remember as a child, and that really affecting me. So it now is.
What did you? Who told you this?
It came from my Irish grandmother.
Your Irish grandmother said to you, "Don't whistle; it makes the Blessed Mother cry."
It makes the Blessed Mother cry.
So you would feel bad as a kid for whistling.
Exactly.
Now, and really, what was going on?
Well, I guess the fact is that, but she believed it. She was told
I don't know. We can't talk for her.
No, we can't. She's not here. But that was perhaps her way of saying, don't cry. It isn't, don't whistle. So I know, you know, my father understood it as something that perhaps was a way to shape people's behavior by telling them something that they really had no rhyme or reason to know whether it was true or not.
Yeah. So, in other words, using superstition, you injunct an additional superiority, an additional force. You say, the God is saying it.
Right.
Right? God is saying it, or the evil, or it'll take you, it'll kill your family, right, cause cholera, it'll do any number of things. Superstition about having your period? Loads of stuff around that. Loads of stuff around that. Convenient. Really convenient, you know, of what to touch, what not to touch, what you're allowed to do. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella. We're talking about superstition as it leads to a lot of your belief. On a second thought, let's talk about magical thinking. Now, superstition is one thing where you believe your mind has or something has the power to do things that have no real causal reality. But magical thinking happens to most children. Let me explain it to you. A child is at home, and it finds some crayons, and it's drawing on the wall, as a child will do. What age do you think, Linda? Most likely age two.
Two, three.
Mm-hmm. Two, three, drawing on the wall with crayons. Mom walks in the door and sees the drawings on the wall, and she says, "Oh, my God, look at what you've done. You've given me a headache." And she goes in her room and slams the door. Now, here's a child, 2 years old, sitting there looking at the wall, saying, with this crayon, and he holds this crayon, "I gave my mother a headache." And this is the child's belief. I did this. Mommy wouldn't lie to me. So I'm looking at the wall, and I don't want to give mommy a headache, so I try to rub it off. So I take a piece of paper and I try to rub it. And mom comes out and she looks at it and she says, "Now look at what you've done. You've only made it worse." And she slams out the door. In one form or another, this has happened to every one of us. Here's what we had to figure out. If I use my power to do something, I don't have the power to undo it. Very important information. If I use my power, if I believe I have power, then I don't have the power to undo it. Now, we'll take that down to people about their feelings and how people feel about expressing their feelings. Same thing, you know. If I say something, if I say the wrong thing, you are going to get hurt by it. Therefore, it is my responsibility because I'm hurting you. Well, I've heard it often enough, people blaming each other for what they feel. You see, you don't hurt me. You may do something, and that I am the one who feels the hurt because of my own vulnerability. So let's take a typical example. Somebody lies to you, and you sit there devastated, and you say, "He hurt me because he lied to me." No. You felt hurt because you felt deceived. Because you had trusted where you shouldn't be trusting. And you trusted something that maybe you should be trusting, but the consequences of it are sometimes you're disappointed. The pain's in you, not in caused by anybody else. Nobody makes you feel anything. But going back to magical thinking, this is what we thought as children. We make people have headaches. We make mommy sick. We make mommy happy. We create it. This is what we're sold. Not too far from the superstitious belief. See, this is, you make your mother happy. So it's all used, like you were saying, Linda, as a convenience to use a different power. You are my good boy. You make me so proud of you. All of these things are saying you have the power. Now, what's wrong with it is if you use your power badly, you can't undo your power. Once you use it against me, you're not allowed to not use it. 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls in just a little bit. So then there's a different way of looking at it, which is, and we're going to get back to that. Let's take a look at the way we live. One of my favorite old stories was Voltaire's Candide with Pangloss. Pangloss was a classic WBAI positive mind guy, probably the original guy. He said, c'est le meilleur du monde possible. It is the best of all possible worlds. And he said this while the city was burning around his very knees. You know, he said, it's the best of all. He was so overly positive. But that's part of the criticism of Voltaire, that positivity can be poison. What way did you feel in your life? You know, have you spent most of your life, or are you spending your life looking at the future saying, number one, I'm hoping things are going to get better. I'm hoping things get better. Number two, I don't believe things will ever get any better. Number three, I believe it is getting better. See, there's a difference here. The first one is, I hope everything gets better, but it's not so good now. The second is, nothing's ever going to get better. The third one is, I believe it is getting better, and I'm in process of getting better. The fourth is, I believe everything is perfect the way it is, and I don't want anything to change. Everything's fine. Leave it alone. The fifth is, things are getting worse. Things used to be better, but now they're getting worse. And then there's, I'm getting older. I'm getting creakier. I wish I could run the way I used to run, dance the way I used to dance, have sex the way I used to have sex. And I even wish I could smile the way I used to smile. I want to have my old way back. Wishful thinking, hopeful thinking, is critical thinking as well. Which way do you think in your mind? How do you cover it in your mind? What stage are you at in your mind? Because a lot of it has to do with beliefs, superstition, magical thinking. To me, there's only one way. And that is that whatever is, is. And the best we can do is improve slightly. And that itself is really fine. That striving to be so different, putting so much effort into being different, may be critical at some point in your life because it's killing you in some way, like an addiction. You know, that may be, you may have to really put a heavy, heavy work out there. But the goal is to be okay the way you are. The goal is to finally settle in and say, all right, this is me. This is the way I am. A recent article in the New York Times did some new DNA work, and they found that the obese genes, the genes for obesity, they got a little more detail on it, and they found that 90% of the people who lose weight, 90%, the weight's gained back and more. And this is all related to this one specific gene. The researcher, who is overweight, looked at it and said, well, that's okay. Therefore, I'm not going to kill myself over losing weight anymore. However, I will have to watch and keep myself in as good shape as possible. But I realize that I've been struggling harder than everybody else because of the genetics of it. That's what she found in herself. So what a relief to say, okay, so I'll be bigger than everybody else. And I'm not going to kill myself for it. And I'm not going to mock myself for it. And I'm not going to hurt myself for it. There are so many things in life that we could feel that way about. just you the way you are at this point. And you may try real hard to discipline yourself and change yourself. And it's only in that one area, in the area of addiction, that you have to take a heavy hand. Because sometimes you get caught in something, you get stuck, and it possesses your life. But wishing for it to stop, hoping for it to stop, that may work. Or just watching it stop. This is Armand Amour with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes at 212-209-2900 after our short break. And what do you think, Linda?
Well, I think this is a wonderful topic that many people will relate to. I think that this speaks of a volume of different beliefs that we have accumulated, and perhaps even just become more aware of it. That in itself will help us to make those whatever changes we need to make and be hopeful for our future. So I'm hoping that we get some interested callers.
Yeah. Do you know, if people have hope, it's quite a difference, isn't it?
Oh, for sure.
But if people lack hope, you know, depression, there's a level of depression that's so bad you just don't believe it's ever going to get better. And when you believe it, when you can't feel it getting better, it's hard to get the motive, get the process started. What you and I work on when we help people is we go for that glimmer, that little sunlight that's coming through the cracked ceiling. You know, that little bit, that tiny, tiny bit that we could use and work on to try to find through that to get the person back onto the earth.
Yes, and I think a show like this, as you always do, Armand, I think you offer that. I think when you speak about drawing on the wall, I saw myself as drawing on the wall and knowing my mom gets the headache and would get upset. So I think that when you speak from the heart, as you do with such topics, that the callers, anyone who can hear this, has that glimmer of hope. Oh, aha, there's like an aha moment that gives us that hope that says, gee, I could get it better. I could get more insight into why I do certain things that may, in fact, not be working so beneficially for myself. So, yeah.
What's the idea of yoga?
Yoga is,
relating
to this, yoga is an opportunity to find those spaces in ourselves, those spaces in our body and our mind that enable us to put in that hopefulness, that joy, that
glimmer. But you're not thinking in yoga.
Oh, gosh, no.
So where does it put in hopefulness?
Yoga is a way of life. So it's a thinking, feeling, but it's a being. It's a being in that hopeful place that we're speaking of.
Well, why do you say hopeful? Because hopeful would be thinking.
Because hopeful, well, in yoga we speak about defining space, whether it be physical when we're stretching and breathing. It's all in the breath, and the breath would allow us more space, more clean space, virgin space, space that hasn't been perhaps even looked into. So again, a hopefulness that we can open that space, breathe
into. Wait, again,
into
you
it.
Say hopefulness.
Yes.
Hopefulness is thinking of the future, but it's a feeling process.
It's a feeling.
So let's get rid of the word hope.
Okay. Then it's being.
It's beingness.
Being. It's breathing. It's openness. Yes. Yes. That's exactly. So we can change and make a synonym of hope and make it open.
Hoping.
Oh, open.
Openness. I like
yes.
that.
Yeah, I do.
Openness
too.
Is the word to do. So listen, my friends, we're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. We will be back with you next Tuesday, I think, and not Wednesday. And for those of you who have been asking about the archives, I have called. I think I've returned all of the calls of people. If you haven't received my call and you'd, I promise to do so, please call my office and we will make sure. Send me an email and I'll be sure to get to you. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then we'll continue and take your phone calls.
Why everything that's supposed to be bad make me feel so good? Everything they told me not to is exactly what I would. Man, I tried to stop, man, I tried the best I could, but
you make me smile.
What's your addiction? Is it money? Is it girls? Is it... I've been afflicted by not one, not two, but all three. She's got the same thing about me, but more about us. She's coming over, so I guess that means I'm a drug. Just let me peek now. I mean, damn, I'm so curious. She's got a lover, so the lies and the lust is a rush. Time's of the essence. I need you to be spontaneous. Roll up the Doja, Henny and Coca-Cola. Then I'm coming over, cause it's never over. Why everything that's supposed to be bad make me feel so good? Everything they told me not to is exactly what I would. Man, I tried to stop, man, I tried the best I could, but
you make me smile.
I see the emotion in your eyes that you try not to show. We get the closest when you high or you drunk or you blow. So I pour the potion so we can both get high as we can go. Then I'll get the lotion and do something to me when your thighs is exposed. No turning back now, I mean I don't mean to impose. Not now, but right now, I need you to undress and then pose. I'm into that now, get your vibe when the doors get closed. Roll up the Doja, Henny and Coca-Cola. And I keep coming over, cause it's never over.
Why everything is supposed to be bad make me feel so good? Everything they told me not to is exactly what I would. Man, I tried to stop, man, I tried the best I could.
Come on, you ready?
Make me smile.
You have plenty of calls.
Listening to Kanye West.
Kanye West.
Make me smile. Yep, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're taking your calls. We're talking about your plans. We're talking about life. We're talking about superstition. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armando.
Yes.
It's Omar from the Big
Bang. Omar, how nice to hear you. Good.
I have a million superstitions, and unfortunately, some of them have come true. I remember when I was living in La Belle-Provence, and it was very cold. It was a group of us sitting in a circle, a lot of Africans who were expatriates, students that had to live in Canada because their lives were being threatened. Anyway, I was told to go out, and someone took my hat and threw it on a bed. And I was furious. I said, brother, why would you do that? Something negative is going to happen. Do you know, when I went outside to start my car again, do you know the car wouldn't start? First of all, everyone was laughing at me when I said that. And that was something that my grandmother had told me, many superstitions. And when that happened, the people got freaked out because they couldn't believe it. I said, look, I knew something was going to happen. I told you. And it did. And my son was spellbound. At the time, he was about 13. He says, Dad, how did you know that? I said, I've been told that for at least 10 lifetimes. Do not put your hat on the bed.
Okay, now, Omar.
And that was something that freaked everybody out, and me also, by the way.
Good. And I must tell you this, that was almost every family knows, don't put your hat on a bed or on a table.
Exactly.
But there's a reason, see? And it's lice. Lice. There were head lice. Head lice everywhere. And so in Europe, people would say, they would just say, don't ever put your hat on the bed because the head lice would get into your bed.
Okay.
But that became a superstition.
Exactly.
That it was something about it. So coincidentally, something went wrong with your car. But I'm willing to bet that family history of don't put your hat on the bed has nothing to do with making bad things happen.
But what about one time I walked underneath a ladder, and about 2 minutes later I found $5 on the ground.
Sure. So therefore you spend all your life walking under ladders.
There you go. Armand, you know why I listen to this station? Because it's the university on the air.
Yeah,
and
sure
you
is.
Have a beautiful way of explaining things. And I just wanted
so
to
do
wish,
you, Omar. So
I,
do you.
I just wanted to wish someone who's very special in my life a very, very happy birthday. And
hey.
That's Brooklyn's own Max Roach.
Yeah, I know Max, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Max left us, but I know he's up in heaven playing those drums. Happy birthday, Max, and keep rocking.
Yes.
I love you, brother. Take care.
Okay.
Salam aleikum.
Last time I met Max Roach was at the Central Nassau Y. I grew up around Max Roach and some of the other people. And I was at the Central Nassau Y, and he was there playing with a dancer. He was playing just a cappella with a dancer, just a dancer and Max Roach. And he was magic. Just magic. Magic. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armando Milha. You're on the air.
Hi, Armando.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing, sir? I'd just like to say Happy New Year.
Thank
you. You've got a great show. My problem is this. I made a mistake. You know, hindsight's 20/20. I was going through a divorce. I'm a Roman Catholic, being told by superstition. I do believe in God, but... And believe me when I tell you, it had nothing to do with adultery or gambling. Or I'm a retired, you know, police officer. My ex-wife, don't want anyone to say anything bad about her, but she was going through menopause, and most men are ignorant of the consequences and not dealing with it. I was like everybody else, hustling, working two jobs, and I felt she was being ungrateful because she was a homemaker. To make it short, she got angry. And in the divorce process, I was fearful for my kids. You know, you say try to be happy. I think a father can only be as happy as their unhappiest child. So 2 years prior to that, my partner killed himself, and my best friend's brother killed himself, who was a millionaire, and so and stuff. So, and I did a lot of reading, and I got fearful. You know, I said, oh, this divorce, my son is doing great in school, and I called a timeout and whatnot, and my ex-wife, you know, she had leverage, and she said, do this, that, or I'll get you in trouble on the job. To make it short, I fired my attorney. I said, this is getting out of hand, money's being blown, the kids are under a lot of stress, I don't even see the kids. I was under stress as well, so I signed everything away. And I did it because I've been a Roman Catholic, and I was reading the Bible. It says, Jesus says, if somebody asks for a coat, you know, give him more. I said, well, she is the mother of my children, and before this occurred, she was okay, but I guess the chemical processes, you know, not to be sexist or anything like that, but now I've become, you know, reading about it. My sister's angry at me because financially I'm... I should have been a lot better at this stage in the game. And I say to myself, you know, I'm thinking of going back to court and getting that verse. But then the fear comes. My daughter's 16 and she's doing great in school.
All right, now wait. So this is like your poor mind. Your mind never settles down.
No.
You're always in another place other than the place you're at.
I'm in good shape. I mean, yeah. I don't want to sound like, I mean,
no, I know
well
not.
Read.
I know
people, I'm healthy, I don't take any medicine, you know.
Yeah.
My children are healthy, but this is...
But we need something that would silence your mind. Because from where you are, you're always spinning. And let me teach you about this thinking style, which we call a sequential. Okay, and here's what your mind does. Your mind takes a thought. And then every time it has a thought, and it happened just now as you were talking, it has a second thought. Now, this is unlike people who have random thoughts. People have random thoughts. They have one thought, then they have two, three, four, and five all at once. But you're like a tree. You're like a branch. You think in one direction, like, I think I'll go to the store. And then at the same time, your mind branches off and says, well, which store will it be? And then if you go on those branches, it's always two choices. The thing I want you to study about yourself is that you always have two options. Not many, but two. And you get stuck between the two. What we hope to do is get you to a point where you're not making a decision, but just at peace with whatever is. Now, that could happen through any number of disciplines, but you got to find that quiet place. Because from where you are, you're just going to make yourself more and more and more confused. As beautiful as the work that you've done in yourself is, because clearly you've done a lot of good stuff. Find the quiet place. You got to find the quiet place where your mind gets completely at rest, and the rest will almost take care of itself.
Well, what do you suggest? Because I don't drink. I don't, you know.
I would suggest one of two things. I think either a meditation, maybe yoga, something like that, something real quiet.
But to escape, is that the answer to escape?
It's not escape.
No?
No, it's not escape from. It's moving towards. moving towards? There's a part of your heart that you're afraid of.
Well, I don't want my son to fail.
No, it's about you. It's not about your son. It's about you. We'll get there. If you want, go to my website. There's some information on there about it. Contact me if you want to. I'll direct you to somebody who could help you find it. Because it's going to, you know, you're doing so beautifully. It's just going to use a lot of wasted time using trying to figure it all out. And thanks for calling in. What's your name? 212-209-2900.
He's gone.
Yeah, I know. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
Hi. I just like to bring another side of you talking about superstition.
Sure.
I know a lot of used, you know, to persuade other people. I grew up with a lot of superstitions, especially about the evil eye on the baby.
What country was that?
I'm from Brazil.
From Brazil, okay.
Yeah. And we made a little gold necklace with a fist hand, and you put that on the baby to avoid evil eye and all of that. People used to compliment a lot my hair when I was a kid. And my stepmother would say, that's not good when they say that, because your hair might fall out, might fall off. When they say that, you say, cruz credo is a word that you say that will supposedly will protect me from the, you know, the evil eye from my hair. And, you know, when I became a teenager, I said, how ridiculous, you know, how ridiculous. But it did something for me. I think looking at the positive side also taught me, because people do look at you when you're a kid. They do sometimes let you know their intentions, the way they look at you when you get their, you know, feeling. And I think it helped me observe that and protect myself a little. Because
okay, now let's take a journey here. What's your name?
Katie.
Katie, listen now. You had a woman who was your father's second wife?
Yes.
Right? And how old was she when they got married? Compared to you, how much older was she?
She was about 20 years older than me. When they got married, I was 6. She was 26.
So she's very young, right?
Right.
So now she's a very young woman looking at you 6 years old. Now, did you have a good relationship with your father?
Very, very,
very
close.
Very close. So now I have a 26-year-old girl who's marrying and looking down at a little girl who is loved by her daddy. And
right.
I say, hey, I don't want you to be so close to your father, so I'm going to give you things to be scared about.
Okay.
And now if the thing everybody admires your hair, did your father like your hair?
He did.
Yep, so there she is, and she takes it away. If anybody admires your hair, it's going to fall out, trying to scare a little kid.
I can't believe you're saying that, because she was very jealous of me. Also, she would say, she would say, if every time people say I was so beautiful, she would say, not in front of people, but when you're alone, when little girls, when they're pretty, when they're little, they be ugly when they grow up. And things
right.
like
and she
that.
Would make more things. You're going to get ugly when you grow up. So then you grow up, and there's a part of you that has to deal with this. Because
right.
there's two bad problems here. Number one is a mother who's not a mother. You lost your first mother. Did she die?
Actually, first I was told that she died, but later on we discovered that we actually were kidnapped. And we met my mother when I was 16.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you were kidnapped and you met your mother when you were 16.
Yeah.
So you went through that trauma.
Right.
And then, so when did you see your father? I mean, when you were kidnapped?
Well, we were younger. I was. He didn't went to live with my stepmother right away. So I just remember scenes, but I don't remember. I didn't remember being kidnapped. And my father first told us that she passed. First she told us that she abandoned us, and then he told us
she
when
died.
I started asking questions that. She passed away.
Okay,
and
so
then
Katie,
when I was 15, I asked, you know, somebody told me, no, you should, I don't believe in this, some other member, a family member. And then I asked my father, and then 2 weeks later, he told me the truth and made arrangements for me to meet my mother.
So, Katie, here's the story. You're a kid who's been through a big trauma. You had all the trust that you had in grown-ups was destroyed. Your father lied to you over and over again, even though you loved him and he loved you.
Yeah, that was a big disappointment because he was everything to me. When I discovered he lied to me, it was very hard.
Yep. And then your stepmother lied to you because she was jealous of you. Your mother probably lied to you. You know, everybody lied to you. The kidnappers lied to you. It's little wonder that you would have to try to depend on some sense other than what people say and say, this is the way I have to interpret it.
Right.
This is what's going to happen. In fact, I'll bet when you got older, you had trouble with your hair. Did you have trouble with your hair?
No, I did. Actually, I just played down everything. I just didn't want to get attention for myself.
I hear you, Katie.
I never wanted people to say I was beautiful. I was very afraid when people compliment
Katie,
me. It was
Katie,
very
can,
hard.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Do you like the way you look?
I do. I never had a problem with the way I look. I just had the problem how to relate with
Sure.
I didn't know how to relate to people
how
in relation
you?
The way I look. That was
how
my
could
problem.
You know what I need you to do? I need you to be in a woman's group. I need you to find a group of women you could really trust, and that would heal you. That would actually heal this problem. That's your step. That's the next step for you.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
It's impossible. If I had to pick the worst thing in the world for you, this is what I would be recommending, because this is the most difficult for you. But that would fix it, because what we got now is such a hangover from the old stuff that it's holding you back. And you sound wonderful on the air. You sound beautiful on the air. You sound like you're really learning about yourself. But if you want to make it happen faster, consider a woman's group.
Mm-hmm.
Consider that. That will move you. Because part of what you're really feeling underneath all this is anger. You're an angry person because you resent all of these lies, all of these years, and being let down by so many people.
Okay, thank you. I'll try that. Hopefully I sort things out.
Sort things out. If you need any help, go to my website. Send me an email. Okay?
Thank you. Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. You know, the Facebook account that we have for The Positive Mind, it's got a lot of people who use it as a chat room. But throughout that chat room, and I asked them not to use it as loosely as a chat room, but they have a right to. So they discuss many issues between themselves. But there's also a stream of people who discuss what happens during the program. And I wish we could have that so that people could communicate about the program specifically and not about issues that are completely unrelated to the program. I don't know how we could do it, but those of you, my friends, who are in charge of Facebook, if you could somehow make that happen, I would really appreciate it, meaning my very active people who are on there all the time, five times a day. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, how are you doing?
I'm good.
This is Gil from Brooklyn.
Hello, Gil.
All right. So I find myself falling into the latter category, the one that's always wishing. You know, wishing things were better, wishing this or that. I guess that's where I find myself now.
When you wish that things are better, Gil, do you compare yourself to other people, or do you just consider it's all your own effort?
It's more of an idea. If I had one object or one thing that would make everything better, you know.
What would it be today?
Like, for instance, it'd be if I had $1 million, you know, I'd be all right, you know.
Okay. It makes sense. What could you really hope for today to have in your heart? Let me ask you something. If you had somebody who you really trusted as a good friend, how would that be?
That would be a fantastic thing.
It would be fantastic. Let me ask you something. A good friend. Imagine somebody who you felt safe with, a buddy, mm-hmm. a pal. How long since you've had that?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it's been a long time.
Well, this is what it sounds like from my end you're missing. What you're missing is anybody. You're alone on this planet. You figure if you get the money, you get the car, you get the house or something, you'll be able to isolate yourself a little better on the planet. What I'm looking for you to do is to connect. And the way to connect, I don't know, a buddy, a pal. Forget about romance. Romance is just too much effort. And the way to find a pal, a buddy, or anything could be any number of things where men share things in common, which could be volunteer work or sports or anything like that, where there's somebody who you look around, could be in group therapy, could be at AA meetings, could be anywhere, mm-hmm. where you see somebody who seems like they're on the planet, who seems like they're here, and you could hang out. Now that's worth gold to you. That's what you need in your heart.
So then it's more about being present then, so
yes,
to speak?
Yes, absolutely.
So if I can, because I am in a, I mean, I am married. I do have kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I got a dog, so, you know.
Yeah, well, someone like a dog. Someone like you feel towards your dog, but yeah. someone who is up a level from the dog as well. Because the dog is a unrequited loving. The dog is absolutely loving. That we understand. But a buddy. Yeah. Pal, what do you call your dog? What's your dog's name?
His name is Buddy, yeah.
I heard that in my voice, and I said, he's got a dog named Buddy.
Little Buddy, actually.
I'm sorry, it's spooky the way it happens around here. It's like it flashes in my forehead. Buddy,
indeed.
I'm saying he should get a buddy, and he's got a dog named Buddy. Yeah, well, as I said, a friend. A close
yeah.
friend, important for you. Your dad was a little bit of a disappointment, huh?
Well, yeah, there was some distance between us. Although later in his elder years, we did get a lot closer, though. I mean, but in the beginning, I always felt like at odds or just not connecting, so to speak.
Yeah, the kid in you is still aching. As I said, a male friend makes all the difference in the world. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to have to be going, my friends. We'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Special thanks to all the callers who didn't get through, the ones who did get through, and to all the engineers at WBAI.